Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the very last day of August, Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues?
But you
Here
know what?
Comes the news. But before we do the news, I want to again say I apologize for my voice. It's once again allergies, and I don't have a voice. This morning I woke up, I sounded like Mickey Mouse. At least it's getting better than that.
We should have brought some helium in.
Yes!
Oh, that would have been so cool.
That would have been great.
You sound pretty normal now.
What?
You sound pretty normal now.
I know, maybe to you. Inside my head, I'm terrible. All right, a note before we get into this news item. Because I don't want to set off everybody's smart speaker, I will again use the word Alaska in naming Amazon smart speaker.
Oh, this was a good one.
Thanks again, Dennis. Would you pay for a less dim-witted digital assistant? Amazon is about to find out. Amazon is planning to sell a paid subscription for an artificial intelligence revamped version of that, which would cost as much as $10 a month. Among the features of the subscription, Alaska, expected in October, are recipe suggestions based on your family's dietary restrictions, like you couldn't do that by yourself, and AI summaries of the news, like you can't get those everywhere already. Please note that you'll still be able to use the current version of Alaska without a subscription fee. The company already offers Amazon Prime and other subscriptions, and most people buy an Echo speaker or another Amazon device to access Alaska. Still, a paid version of Alaska would be a milestone. The company is not directly charged money for its digital assistant in Alaska's 10-year history. Paid Alaska would be another example of a subscription fee for technology features or products, some of which you've previously gotten for no additional charge. Dating apps, social media services, and even printer, ink, and kitchen gadget apps are pushing subscriptions. Most companies charge extra for more digital storage for your phone, and technology analysts have suggested that Apple and Samsung might, like Amazon, charge a subscription for some AI features. Tens of millions of Americans regularly use Alaska and other digital assistants, but most for relatively simple tasks that could make it tough to persuade people to pay for a version of Alaska. According to surveys conducted by consumer intelligence research partners, roughly two-thirds of Americans who own an Alaska-powered device use it at least a few times a week for listening to music and asking straightforward questions like checking the weather forecast. I do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
The research group says the majority of people never use Alaska for more complex things like turning on the lights at your command or shopping on Amazon. Those were among the tasks that Amazon and other companies were once expected would be significant uses for digital voice assistants. There was a lot of optimism in the 2010s that digital assistants like Alaska, Apple Siri, and Google Assistant would become a dominant way we interact with technology and become as life-changing as smartphones have been. Those predictions were mostly wrong. After a decade of mostly using the voice assistants to fire off a quick text, check the weather, or play music, it's untested whether people want AI versions for more complicated interactions. Maybe our habits with digital assistants suggest that you like limited-purpose technology to just do the basics. And our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Amazon wants you to pay for new Alaska features. Your choices are happy to, can't wait. I'll have to see what the features are. So, Google Home, you say. And can't vote, laughing too hard. So far, we've got 25 votes, and I hope you're sitting down. can't vote laughing too hard as well in the lead. 20 out of the 25 votes are for that. And I know that you've got a lot to say about this, so feel free to give us a call on that or anything else. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
I had read an article. These are really crappy headphones. I had read an article last year or so saying that Amazon is losing $1 billion a year on its voice services because people are not buying things on Amazon with their voice, which is what they're supposed to do.
That was the assumption. You would say, "Hey Alexa, buy me." I get suggestions all the time. You bought X. Do you want to renew? Get more? No. Yeah. Get away from me.
Mm-hmm. So everything that you do with almost all of the voice assistants are set a timer, check the weather, nothing they get paid for.
Yeah.
And Amazon has been slowly adding higher prices. So Amazon Prime, they didn't raise the price. They just added commercials.
Right.
But if you pay more, you can get fewer commercials if you pay more.
Right.
So yeah, the bottom line is, they've been raising their prices on all their services and not really giving you that much more value out of it. And so many people have subscription fatigue. Fortunately, it is fairly easy to start and stop subscriptions to a lot of the services. But what I find funny is there are apps that you can buy that will tell you if you have any subscriptions you're not using.
Right.
I just look at my subscription list.
Well, that's simpler.
Yeah.
It's a real problem for the companies, and I understand that. I truly do. But I'm sorry, you can't expect me to pay more for not much more in the way of service. If it's not worth it to me, I'm not paying for it.
Especially commercials on TV. Especially, you know, it's us older folks. For 50 years, we've been watching commercials on TV.
Right.
And it's when you get up and run to the bathroom or something.
Right.
So having a commercial in your Amazon stream is, that's the way it used to be. We don't care that much.
Right. It doesn't bother us. Except, again, the commercials are the same commercial over and over and over.
Well, that's recording. You know, that's the biggest thing for me is I just record it, and then you can fast forward through
and
all the commercials.
Right.
In the days before recording, youngsters today will never know the panic of your siblings screaming, "It's back on!" And you're still in the bathroom. And you're racing across the house to jump over the couch because the TV show you were watching is back on.
Yep.
No recording. No.
And you have to watch it because you can't see it again.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And
reruns
the family, the family gathering around the TV.
The one TV in the house.
The one TV every Thanksgiving to watch The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Or every Christmas to watch, you know, all the kids' Christmas shows, Frosty the Snowman and all of that. It was when you talk about must-see TV, you planned weeks ahead.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
No, we can't go that day because that's the day that Wizard of Oz is on.
Yep. And if the president was speaking, he was on all three channels.
So all three of them. Mm-hmm. You had simultaneously.
Nothing else to do.
Yep. Yep.
So we had a shortwave radio in the house. I could listen to other things on.
Right. And Saturday mornings,
we
would get up and sit with our bowl of cereal and watch the test pattern until Captain Kangaroo came out.
At the end of the day, TVs went off the air
and
started showing the test pattern.
And played the national anthem.
Yep.
Well, heck, I can remember when the remote was me. Dave, get up and go change a channel.
Yep.
But you didn't change very often because it was only three channels.
Right.
I remember when we got, you know, the WUHF, you know, the independent station that played all old stuff because it was cheap for them to buy.
Right.
Yeah.
I watched pretty much every horror movie ever made in the 60s on that station.
Yep.
It was great.
And the only thing that was, only thing suitable for younger people on PBS was Doctor Who.
Right. Right.
So we never counted that as the fourth network because it didn't really exist.
Right. Not for us. That's right. But those were, you know, those were days when you also had, I don't know how often you'd see a repeat of a commercial. Not often at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they were spoiled for choice. You know, can I get on three times this week? No, there's no room for you three times this week.
Mm-hmm. And nowadays, there's so many avenues of content where commercials need to go between broadcast, cable, streaming. Every streaming service has their own commercial content. And it's no wonder you see the same commercial over and over again. Or what I see a lot on YouTube TV is, here's a moment of zen.
Right.
Because there's no commercial to fit in that spot.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So you get a moment of zen, which I like, actually.
Especially when it comes through nice on my 4K TV.
Right, right. But that's, you know, that's... We're going to see more of that. This has been a debate for decades about email. Email is free.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been companies who said you should pay for email.
There were a few test programs. Was it Prodigy? You had a penny a piece to send email, hoping that would cut down on spam.
Right.
Because the spammers wouldn't pay for email. Turned out regular folk won't pay for email either because it always was free on somebody else. So.
Right.
Yep.
And there were companies that would charge for things like encryption. So if you had, you know, if you wanted to send an email, you could do that for free. But if you wanted to encrypt it, you had to pay to do that. The problem is the person at the other end had to also be paying for encryption, or they wouldn't be able to read your email.
Yep.
That's a problem. So it, you know, there's been a lot of that. There's been a lot of that along the way. People trying to figure out how to make money off of the internet, and really, the number one answer is ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can get a sponsor. So, for example, I have no sponsor for my Ask Nick newsletter. I would love to have a sponsor for my Ask Nick newsletter, but I don't have one. And so, you know, I don't have any ads, but would I be willing? It depends on the person, you know, it depends on the company that
You can be more careful about what sponsors you get, and are they related to your content?
Right. And are they legitimate?
Yeah.
You know, are they somebody I actually would be willing to back.
Yeah. Now we're seeing a trend. A lot of podcasts have had host read ads. Now we're seeing ad injection. I was listening to a podcast on the way here, and 90% of the commercials are in Spanish. So I guess my location was set wrong, and I got injected with all the Spanish ads.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, who is it? Google is planning on killing ad bloggers.
Oh, yeah. Well, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Google's trying to kill third-party cookies as a security precaution, so that people can't, you know, companies can't track you on the internet. People want that. People don't want to be tracked. W3C consortium has said third-party cookies must die. A bunch of advertisers in the EU petitioned the EU court saying that Google is restraining our business. If Google blocks third-party cookies, they're going to put us out of business. And so the EU ordered Google not to block third-party cookies. So that project is gone.
Yep.
So you get to be tracked because of the EU. Now, the funny thing is the EU is usually more consumer-friendly than it is company-friendly, like here in the U.S.
Right.
So I guess Google didn't word their defense properly. People don't want to be tracked. And the advertisers say, well, we have to track you. Well, no, the thing Google had worked out, your browser chose what ads you saw.
Right.
The other end didn't know anything about you. Your browser picked a pool of ads that are relevant to your interests. And so you still got ads, advertisers still got paid, but nobody was tracking you.
Right.
That wasn't good enough for the advertisers in Europe.
So it's all about eyeballs. It's all about who you can reach. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hi. Actually, it's Gary. But
sorry, Gary.
It's very close. I have two things, and the first one is an announcement that some of your listeners might be interested in. Is that I got a letter that was obviously written by a law firm that announcing that a company that has a couple of that I and my wife have a couple of insurance policies with John Hancock, had been hacked in November of 2023, and that now they got around to telling their consumers that they've been hacked, and in fact, my name, Social Security number, and date have been exposed, and they gave the usual advice about, of course, checking all your accounts, making sure you check your credit accounts, and so on. But the only reason I announced it or wanted to let your other listeners know is that if they do have products with this company, they'll probably be receiving the letter soon.
Yeah. Thank you. They
may not have known until now. That's a big problem with a lot of these big hacks, is the company may not know they've been breached until their data shows up on the dark web. The NPD breach that just happened, 3 billion records of virtually everyone in the U.S., Canada, and U.K., with including their Social Security numbers, were breached. There's nothing you can do about it, and there's no penalty for having it done.
No, that's the problem.
Their stock may drop a little bit, but it'll probably bounce back up again.
Yep.
And you'll get free credit monitoring from one of the credit reporting agencies.
Yeah.
But the credit reporting agencies got hacked into, and all of the U.S. taxpayer records were breached a couple years ago. So it's horrible.
It really is. But, again, you do all the due diligence you can. And as I said, the letter was obviously written by a law firm, and
there's always class action lawsuits that have started that start the minute one of these scams come out.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to announce that, and then I have a question.
Go ahead.
It's one of the most puzzling problems I've ever had, is that I'm trying to print something I got in my mail, and I can give you some background. I have a Lenovo ThinkPad that's 5 years old. It's it's a professional brand of Windows 10. I'm up to date with all the updates, and the printer I have is probably 9 years old. It's an HP in the 4500 series, and I have. Some products that I know you don't think much of, certainly Microsoft 10, and I'm not sure how you feel about HP, but the mail I have is Yahoo Mail, and Adobe is the one that opens opens the attachments, and that's what I'm trying to print. And I've done the obvious things to make sure that the printer is connected. It's a Wi-Fi connection. The test page on the printer does work. And another check I've tried to make is that I've had I tried to print an old document from LibreOffice, and it did print right out. And I've done the troubleshooter in Windows for printers, and it didn't find anything. And I did check the troubleshooter on the website for HP for this printer. And if one thing it suggested it is to make sure you have all the updates. And,
right.
And so that would be something I can check. I wonder if you had any other ideas.
Well, one of the things, backing up half a minute, is are the attachments actually PDFs? Because that's all that Adobe Acrobat will open are PDF files. So if they're not a PDF, they won't print right.
Can you open it? Can you see it on your screen?
Does it look?
Yes, I do. Yes.
All right, so it must be a PDF.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I would do is try downloading it to your computer.
Right.
And then printing it.
Yeah.
I did try that, and it didn't work. What I was wondering is if there's a way to take it right from the inbox directly to LibreOffice. But do I have to download it first and then?
Can you right click and say open with?
Maybe.
Right click on the attachment, and there might be an open with command.
Yeah, I know that you can do it from file open. So in LibreOffice, you can just go to file and open and find the PDF and open it.
After you download the PDF.
But you'd have to download it first.
And download it into downloads rather.
Right.
Okay.
Now, what happens when you try to print? Do you get an error message on the computer or the printer?
No, I'll tell you what happens. The printer starts to run, and it sounds as though it's printing. You get all the noises. It's, as you know, an old-fashioned ink printer, and everything's up to date. The tank is full for the black and white copies that I want, and the printer works. It runs through the printer, but what I get is a blank page. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
It would sound like the black is out. But if other things print,
they do. The page printed.
Interesting.
It really is interesting.
What did you got this from whom? From your insurance company?
Well, this is a whole different problem. I should have framed it differently. No, the insurance company mailed it through the US post office. But this is something I'm trying to print from my inbox in Yahoo Mail. And I have loaded it into downloads, just as you suggested. It is a PDF. I open it right up. And it's the strangest thing. It sounds as though it's printing. The printer works. It comes right out the way it should. And it's a complete blank page. It is so strange. And the test page prints perfectly. I wanted to get in early, and maybe some of your other listeners have something similar. I spent a couple hours on it, and I see every problem as a chance to learn something.
Yeah. Do other PDFs print properly?
I'll try that.
That didn't come through email.
I'll try that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if perhaps, you can print it directly from Yahoo. Just hit print there.
Yeah, I did try that. It says you get two choices. You can download it, download the attachment, or you can bring the whole email up on the whole attachment up on a different. It's a different. It will say, "Do you want to print the page?" I'm not sure if that.
That would probably print the email.
That's right.
Yeah, you want to open the attachment in a new window and then print that window.
Yeah, that's right. And that's maybe. Well, I'll keep at it.
Yeah, let us know. We got to take a break. I'm sorry.
And I'm going to go ahead then.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
Going on. Oh, sorry, I want to thank Dennis for covering for me last week at the air show.
Great.
I actually flew in the noontime demo.
Very nice.
My hands were shaking. I was heart was pounding. My watch told me my heart rate hit 115.
Wow. Did the plane make it through?
Both days.
Nice.
Plane survived, and we'll fly again.
Excellent.
We had a squadron, and we had four B-17s lined up, but one of them had landing gear problems, so only three got in the air. But that worked out good. And now this
three still a squadron?
I don't know. A trio.
A trio.
Yeah. And then so this weekend, yesterday, today, and tomorrow is the helicopter show, also in Macedon. And tonight, weather willing, which it looks like the thunderstorms are going to blow away in time, there's going to be a night show starting at dusk where light-up planes and helicopters will be flying around. I'm trying to work up enough courage to fly my light-up airplane. It's a little tricky at night when you don't have any visual clues about what's around you. And fireworks starting probably in the 8 to 9 range when it gets dark enough. So that's in Macedon. I'll post a link to it in a moment. Near corner of 31F and 350.
Nice.
Technically, I guess it's Palmyra, but that sounds so far away, we say Macedon.
Yeah. I should also mention, in relation to what Gary was talking about in the first thing, if you think you're the...
victim?
This is a little different, but if you think you're the victim of a fraud or a scam... we have some resources on our homepage, a link to resources on our homepage that will help you. It's on our homepage. It's soundbites.org. It's under some important links. Some important links. Okay. And it's the third one down, frauds and scams, the resources you need. And it takes you to a page, thanks to our good friend Dan Lyon, who's the Fraud and Scams Program Manager of Upstate Elder Abuse Center at Lifespan of Greater Rochester. We've got a page of who to report things to and important things you should know to keep yourself safe. So after you get hacked is the first half of that, get scammed is the first half of that page. But before you get scammed is the second half of that page. So you should go and read that. Absolutely, because that's important information. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Rochester, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
The gentleman was having couldn't get his printer to print out, even though it was going back and forth. This is going to sound silly, but have him check the printer settings, or did they actually go into the document and check the text settings, and make sure that it's what it's trying to print is black print, not white.
Yep, we were actually talking about that during the break. If the one of the tricks people use to get you to not print something is you can have different colors for the screen and printing, and it is possible that that document is set to print in white, and he should assuming he can check for that and it's not locked.
And I learned about that back when I was shopping my resume, and because all these HR people would just have a bot go through and scan the document for keywords.
Right.
And so if you, at the bottom of, you'd have a little area for a small text, you could do it in small font, didn't matter, and you'd put all keywords you could think of in there that they'd be looking for, and then turn it white. That way, when they went to look, the computer would see it, but they wouldn't see it. They'd print it. It wouldn't show up. And your resume would come out with all the others that had all the keywords they wanted.
Nice. Nicely put. Well, that's a good idea. But, yeah, but you'll also see, for example, on the Security Tango, if you look at the Windows Waltz, it looks like a regular thing. But when you print it, you see checkboxes. And that's, again, the difference between what you see and what you can print. So it is certainly doable, and they may have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Good catch, Andy. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I was listening, and I'm thinking, that sounds familiar. And finally, the light bulb came on.
Yep.
It does that slower these days, but what the heck. we on for tomorrow night, or are we taking the holiday off?
I think we're taking the holiday off. Good point. Normally on Sunday nights, we have the Soundbites Lounge, where we get together via video chat, thanks to Mastermind Lounge. And it's most weeks, but I think this week, because it's the holiday, a lot of people won't be around or will be doing something actually interesting. We will skip it this week.
Okay.
But Thursday night is Rochester Googles.
Yes.
So anybody who's...
Mr. Stewart should be doing dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
All righty.
All right, thanks.
Well, have a good holiday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yeah, it's a... like I said, we do that every Sunday.
Almost every Sunday.
Almost every Sunday.
The first time you don't have it, you can't say every anymore.
Right. Dang near every Sunday.
Yeah. It's called having a life.
Yeah. Right. And so, well, that was last Wednesday. I didn't do the Ask Nick. If you are a member of the Ask Nick team and you get the newsletter, we do it on Wednesday nights, too, so people can get together and ask computer questions there or just chit-chat is what usually happens. I didn't do it this Wednesday. Just, again, life got in the way. So
life finds a way.
Life finds a way. And sometimes it finds a way around what you want to do. So I get that. All right, next news item. New threat analysis from researchers at Kaspersky has revealed a dramatic rise in the number of password-stealing attacks targeting Amazon, Facebook, and most of all, Google users. Kaspersky analyzed a total of 25 of the biggest and most popular global brands in order to determine those that are targeted more by cyber criminals when it comes to phishing attacks. The researchers found that there were around 26 million attempts to access malicious sites masquerading as one of the brands of the first half of 2024 alone. That represents an increase of approximately 40% from the same period in 2023. Sitting at the top of the phishing target pile was Google. Kaspersky said it had seen a 243% increase in attack attempts for the first 6 months of 2024. Facebook users saw 3.7 million phishing attempts. Amazon was at 3 million. Microsoft, DHL, PayPal, MasterCard, Apple, Netflix, and Instagram completed the top 10 most targeted brand list. Microsoft might have only come in fourth in the Kaspersky line of attacks targeting brands, but one phishing technique has seen it in recent months. A 2,000-fold increase in traffic to phishing pages delivered through Microsoft Sway was tracked across July 2024 alone. Microsoft Sway is freely available to users of Microsoft 365 as a cloud-based application to enable the creation of visually rich documentation, newsletters, and presentations. A big part of the problem is that when opening a Sway page, a potential victim is already logged in to their Microsoft 365 account, which adds an air of legitimacy to the phishing attempts, which often target Microsoft Office credentials by the use of QR codes. The target is advised to scan a QR code on their smartphones for ease of use. But the main reason is to bypass stricter security measures found on corporate laptops. The way to stay safe from these attacks are the same as any other attack. Don't respond to requests from people you don't know. Verify any suspicious attacks independently. And follow the rules at the bottom of our scams page, soundbites.org/scams. It's also listed under some important links on our homepage. So, are you paranoid enough? Give us a call. If you dare, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
Yeah, we had two customers get hit by different scams this week. One of them was the Frontier shutting down their email service scam was going around again. If you didn't know already, Frontier is shutting down their email service, and you should have already switched your email program over to Yahoo servers. You don't lose your Frontier frontiernet.com or frontiernet.net email address, but you have to switch to using the Yahoo mail servers instead of Frontier mail servers. And so this scam email is going around with the Frontier logo on it saying, you know, we're going to terminate your mail unless you click here and do all this stuff. And they tricked one of our customers into doing that. And the other one was from Spectrum. We're going to cancel your account because you haven't paid. It had, again, had the Spectrum logo on it. So he replied to the message, don't cancel my account. And didn't see the bounce error because the sender didn't exist because it went to junk. But then he clicked on the link and typed in his credentials with the Spectrum logo. So it didn't look like the real Spectrum login page. But no one.
How many people know that?
Right, they wouldn't know that. But it looked close enough that the casual observer. And then another third one. On her iPad, she got a Windows virus warning. And knew enough that it was fake, but so she went to her computer and Googled Microsoft tech support and called the phone number.
Don't do that. It's not the real one.
Right. And the funny thing was what saved her is she's been using her iPad as her primary device for years. So her computer was running a system, I think, 10.6, the equivalent of Windows 95. So none of the remote access programs would work.
Excellent.
So they couldn't get in.
Excellent.
But, yeah, so you made that first up. That's a fake message. But don't Google a phone number because that's going to be wrong, too. Especially Microsoft. At least with most companies, if you Google the company phone number, you'll probably find it. But Microsoft, they don't publish a phone. They don't want you to call them. If anything, you can chat with them.
Right.
But they really, really, really don't want you to call them.
Yeah, they don't have a call center as such.
Yeah.
So when you get a message saying call Microsoft, it's got to be a fake.
Yep.
It has to be.
Yep.
I got one this week. My Microsoft product was delayed, so I should call them.
Mm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I had actually ordered a Microsoft product.
Yeah.
I ordered Microsoft Office for my wife's new computer.
Okay.
And it was coming DHL. So I got a fake Microsoft. I got a fake DHL. And how do I know they were both fake? Because the real one came through and said it would be delivered on that day. So I already had it in my hand when I opened up those two fake emails.
We usually use the digital downloads because computers don't come with CD drives anymore.
Right. I don't know what they're sending me. I thought it would be a digital download.
Well, they're probably sending you the license card with instructions to go.
Yeah, probably. I haven't opened it yet.
Yeah, the digital download site. Yeah, because you have to have a license now.
Right.
The one thing Microsoft did that was kind of interesting, typically, in the olden days, when you bought boxed software, there was a CD and a license key in it. And then 10 years later, when you want to reinstall it on a new computer, you can't find your license key anymore.
Right.
So Microsoft now requires you to put your license key into your Microsoft account. So 10 years later, you can look up your key again.
Mm-hmm.
It probably won't work on your new computer. But but at least that key is there if you ever need to reinstall it again.
And I had put OpenOffice, LibreOffice, on her machine.
Yeah.
And she liked it, but she didn't like it enough.
Mm. It's just too different. I don't want to learn anything new.
Exactly. I bought her the real thing. Yeah. God bless her.
Another documentary I happen to see is, I don't know if you guys ever saw it, maybe some other folks on. There was a guy out there called the Glitter Bomb.
Oh, yeah.
Guy. All right. Well, and he's gone through five different iterations of the Glitter Bomb. He has since retired it. And what it was, people, was these packages that he'd set out on his porch purposely for porch pirates to steal. And on both versions 4 and 5, he wound up putting it in a car. Because there's pirates out there now, especially out in California. I didn't know this was going so rampant. Literally, on the streets, they'll sit there, and as people are coming by, look for laptops or anything else sitting on, and break into the cars and steal the laptops.
Yeah, one of them he showed that did that you could like break the back corner window, reach in, pull down the seat that probably pulls down to let you get into the trunk.
Yep. And so what he did is on some of these laptops put tracking devices. Because what they found is that they were gathering all these laptops and then selling them back to these scammers. And they traced the scammers back to India. And they have since, due to their research and this whole setting scammers up, has taken down three major scam centers in India due to their efforts of, you know, letting, you know, it's destruction on a car, you know, and lost a property, but has closed down three scam centers that was literally taking down thousands of dollars of people's money a day.
There were a couple of them I saw where he started putting a fart spray in it, so it would spray a noxious. And that the one I really liked is he put two little micro drones that would fly up in the air and spread the glitter and the spray out farther. And then he put cameras in them so that it would broadcast back. He basically put a cell phone in it, GPS tracking camera. And this one kid, apparently mom had enlisted her kids to help sort through all of the packages he stole. The kid is going, some stupid YouTuber is trying to ruin us. Yes, we're trying to ruin the porch pirates.
Yeah, right.
And he wound up putting over a liter of the fart spray in there. So before he had these little cams that would spray it out. No, he put a pump in there that once it was, you took the lid off, he put mechanisms out. So these prongs came out, you couldn't put the lid back down, and all this fart spray was constantly spewing out with, not like the spritz, it was a steady stream of this fart spray all over the place. And it was due to them, like you said, the cell phones, because they'd throw it out, and they thought, oh, we'll keep the cell phones. Well, they also had tracking devices on them and tracked them down.
Right. And now a lot of cell phone, Apple is doing this. They're making it harder to steal. And of course, if you've got a biometric lock on your computer, it's harder for them to get in.
Right. But it's also making it harder for us in service.
Right.
Because, so one of the things you knew, if you're bringing your Apple device in for service, probably same with Google and Samsung and the other ones that have the Find My feature, you have to turn off Find My because we're replacing parts and new serial numbers and whatnot. You have to turn it off at a known location at your house. You come to our office, you can't turn it off until you've been there for an hour.
Wow.
Because someone might have stole it, and they're trying to turn it off at their location. And so it's an added layer of security. So you have to wait until now, you know, our office is your known location. We're hoping that as enough people come to the office, Apple recognizes it as a known location.
Right, right.
But a lot of times it's go back home, turn Find My off there, and then bring the device back.
Well, shouldn't Apple automatically say, oh, you're an authorized service center, we'll turn off, we'll make you known location?
Find My must not talk to service.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Apple, get your act together.
Modern technology.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Bites you in the butt.
Every time.
Yeah.
There's a, you know, to get back to the scam thing. The problem is it's all social engineering, right? What we used to call cold reading, they now apparently call social engineering. You've seen a million times the fake psychics and the fake faith people and all of that. They, you know, they say there's somebody in the audience who's thinking of someone whose name starts with the letter J. Well, J is a very common letter to start a name with. So somebody's always going to pop up and say, Aunt Joan? That's right. It's Aunt Joan. And they go from there. And they
and
do
you filled out the questionnaire template when you went into the reading to begin
with.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you've got the cold, you've got the cold readings. I did cold. Look, back in the day.
You worked your way through college doing
I went through college doing cold readings. I did one of those dinner theater murder mystery things, and I played a magician psychic guy, and I did cold readings on people that they could not believe, and it's the simplest tricks. I'm not even all that good at it. And I did it.
Yep.
And I bent keys, which was a shock to everybody. Again, I'm not that good at it, but I was able to do it. And people still, you know, fall for this stuff. And I get it. You want it to be real. You want to talk to your perished loved ones. You want to know that things are going well in heaven. I get it. But you know, it's the same thing with these cold callers at centers. They get you talking. They figure out what your hot points are, and they hit them over and over and over until, and they scare you, right? One of the biggest motivators is fear. You know, this is going to happen if you don't do this. You know, all kinds of things do it that way. And if you're not, you know, if you're sitting in your own home, suddenly you get this giant red screen, blinking white letters, giant white letters. Your system is infected. Call now.
Don't turn off your computer or all your files will be deleted.
Right. You panic. I get it. You panic. And you make that call because you don't want your files to be deleted. And right away, they're already, you know, halfway home because they've got you calling in a panic. And the thing to remember is that 99% of the well, take what Steve just talked about. You cannot get a Windows virus on your iPad. I will state that categorically. It cannot happen.
Yep.
Same thing is true if you use a Chromebook. Same thing is true if you use Linux or a Mac, a desktop. So, you know, you get those and you take a minute, you take a deep breath, walk away from the computer if you have to, before you come back and think to yourself, this is fake.
There's a guy, I'm trying to find it, I heard a podcast with Mike Rowe, who is going and busting the fake celebrity psychics. And he's recovered millions of dollars in stolen money, like James Randi used to do.
Yeah, what Randi used to do. The amazing Randi.
Yep.
He was a magician. A phenomenal magician who spent most of his life debunking psychics.
And he really, it was like Houdini. Houdini was one of the biggest debunkers. Right. He wanted to believe. Someone show me real psychic whatever.
Right. He wanted to believe, but he never could find a belief because he could reproduce every one of their effects. Or he caught them creating those effects. And that was kind of sad. I mean, he really wanted to do it.
Yeah.
You know? Too bad. Too bad. But, so be careful. If you get one of these scams, whether it's a text message or a big thing on your screen or an email, stop, step away from your computer, take a couple of deep breaths. Then come back and look at it objectively.
As I've always said, though, if you got to think about it more than 5 seconds, delete it.
Yeah, and the more dire the message is, the more likely it's fake.
Right, right, absolutely right. All right, that music tells us we are done with the first hour, but do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, and a whole nother hour of you, and your calls. If you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 800-790-0415. We're going to take a slightly longer break, so go off and take a quick bio break, get yourself a beverage of your favorite sort. But don't forget to come back because we've got a whole lot more sound bites coming your way right here on Member Supported. And truly grateful to you because we are and continue to be Member Supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Grease Rochester, a public service of the Grease Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the second hour of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick will be back with us in just a moment. He had to step out just for a brief moment. But I want to remind everybody, you know, we got another hour ahead of us. So give us a call with your questions at 585-966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And you know, let us know what you think. Have you got anything going for the holiday weekend? And hopefully everybody's going to stay safe because it's going to be crazy out there. They're saying this year they're just flying alone.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying the airports are seeing record travel. As with right now, with the gas prices coming down, it's drastically a lot cheaper. I won't say super drastic, but at least, you know, 10, 15 cents cheaper a gallon, and nowadays that's major, and the prices keep seeming to fall down, so, you know, it's promoting more folks to travel and get around and see their friends and relatives, but, you know, do it safely.
Typically, you don't see Labor Day being a travel holiday. It's more of a stay home and grill.
Yeah, be with friends and barbecue. And
the Texans are quick to point out that no one else barbecues. They're grilling.
I don't know. Some folks in Louisiana and Alabama and that might definitely disagree with you there when they'll sit there and do full, you know, pork roast.
Yep.
I mean, the full pig.
And the brisket. And
yeah, and everything else. Yeah. There could be some definite disagreement.
Yeah.
Because I've had some Louisiana, you know, barbecue, and it's darn good. Back in the day when I could eat spicy stuff, but those days are long gone. My gut just can't do that. Just smelling the spices sets my stomach up.
Right. Oh, you know, the TSA says this is going to be the biggest travel weekend ever.
Yeah.
I don't, I like you said, you don't think of Labor Day as a travel weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But it quite clearly is.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, the last official weekend of the summer.
Before kids go back to school.
Yeah. In most states. A lot of kids are already back to school. I always got a kick out of that. They go back to school in August, and then they have a break in a week later.
You're right.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that we've found is at market, this is generally a slower week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it's a different week.
Yeah.
The number of regulars is less because they're all off visiting somebody.
Yeah.
But the number of new people is more because they're all visiting people in Rochester.
Yeah.
Yep.
Different shift in audience.
Yeah. Last weekend, at the end of Saturday, at the end of the air show, I decided to, you know, stop in the Fairport for dinner. Forgot that it was the Fairport Music Fest.
Oh, cool.
Until I ran into all the traffic. Oh, yeah, that's going on today.
That's when I used to like having the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Getting around to some of these places, you know, when they go down to the Grape Fest or the Hilton Apple Festival, it was no biggie.
It's like every weekend there's two or three different festivals on.
Yeah.
The Webster Garlic Fest is coming up. That surprised me that they can have a whole festival, hundreds of vendors about
it's
garlic.
Because you're not Italian.
Yeah, I suppose.
That's why.
I can never get enough garlic.
That's the truth. It's the truth. And everybody around you gets it the next 3 or 4 days.
My mom was
so
always,
they get to share the benefits. Yeah.
My mom was always whenever we went and had like picnic and burgers and hot dogs or whatnot, she'd put onions on her hamburger and then pick up some more and put them on Dad's hamburger. She's eating it, so he's going to eat it.
That's exactly how that works.
I'll never forget my uncle when he had the pizza shop. I asked him to make one of the white garlic pizzas.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd just gotten out of the hospital, and I was just getting back on my feet. So Lori went and picked it up. And the car smelt for a whole week of garlic.
That's a good pizza.
But I sat there, and I devoured it because I was starved. I hadn't eaten in a couple days because of the sickness and that. And I was going to go to work the next day, and Lori turned to me and said, "You can't. You cannot be near people unless you're downwind because your body is just oozing of garlic."
Yep.
But it was so good. And they did. They loaded it because my aunt, you know, just to be smart ass, because I told her, I really love garlic. Well, she really loaded it up with garlic, and it was the best pizza I had ever
coming
had.
Out white of your pizza. Pores.
Oh, yeah. But that was, I stayed healthy.
Stayed healthy. And
no vampires either.
Yeah, kept the vampires away.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, here's our next news item. Last week, Microsoft mentioned in a support document that it was formally deprecating Windows 39-year-old control panel applets. No more control panel.
Yeah, right.
But following widespread reporting of the change and a whole lot of unkind words about it, Microsoft has either backtracked or clarified its language to remove the note about control panel being deprecated in favor of the settings app. The original post had a line that said the control panel is in the process of being deprecated in favor of the settings app, which offers a more modern and streamlined experience.
And you still can't find anything.
Can't find anything. The current version of the page has changed that sentence considerably. It now says many of the settings in Control Panel are in the process of being migrated to the Settings app, which offers a more modern and streamlined experience. It's not clear whether this reflects a policy change or just a clarification of language. Regardless, the current language reflects what has been happening to the Windows Control Panel throughout the life cycle of Windows 10 and Windows 11. More and more things have been moved to the Settings app over time, and individual control panel applets have been removed over the years. Things like the Displays panel, the Add Remove Program screen, and panels for deprecated features like Home Groups. But most of the old control panels are still included in all current versions of Windows 11, including the upcoming 24H2 update, and they're not going to suddenly disappear en masse. What's incredible about some of the control panels at this point is how far back some of their designs go. You're never more than a double click away from some piece of UI that has been essentially exactly the same since 1996's Windows NT 4.0.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you can tell some of those windows when they open. Oh, God, that's Windows 3.
Yep. When Microsoft's more stable NT operating system was refreshed with the same user interface as Windows 95. Modern Windows versions, by the way, descend from NT, not 95 or 98. The control panel idea is even older, dating all the way back to Windows 1.0 in 1985.
Wow.
Most of the current control panel designs and iconography settled down back in the Vista and Windows 7 in 2006 and 2009, which explains why so many of the panels still feature the rounded, glassy look that defines those versions of the operating system. It's one of the few areas of the operating system that haven't been spruced up for Windows 11, which is otherwise probably Microsoft's most cohesive Windows design since 95 and NT 4.0. Even old apps like Paint and Notepad have gotten facelifts, while other Windows 7 era holdovers like WordPad have been put out to pasture. So how often do you use the Control Panel versus the Settings app? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. It's interesting that Microsoft is still tweaking that.
They got to find different ways to sell their product. Windows is Windows, and there's nothing new or innovated, so what do? They just go rearranging. It's like your living room. You move the furniture around. It's still the same damn furniture, moving it around.
And they probably weren't expecting the outcry of people saying, oh, crap, people still use Control Panel?
Yeah.
We gave you settings 5 years ago. You should have stopped by now.
Well, but that's my point, is that there was nobody at Microsoft who had the authority or the guts to say 10 years ago, you know what? Everything leaves the control panel, goes to settings. We want one thing. And I think that's one of the problems Microsoft has.
Yeah.
There's nobody in authority over everything.
Yep.
You know, back in the day, you had Steve Jobs. If he didn't like it, you didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Unless you could convince him that he liked it, and then it was his idea all along.
Exactly right.
But I think Bill Gates was the same way, wasn't he?
Bill Gates, yeah.
Yeah, Bill Gates the same.
And that's right. Back in the day, Bill Gates was the same way. But nowadays, everything is run by committee.
Yep.
And you had a laser-focused window, Macintosh experience back in the day. You had a laser-focused Windows experience back in the day.
It's broken up in groups.
That's one of the beautiful things about Linux. It's still being run by Linus Torvalds. He has other people doing things, but they all go back to him.
They're all correlated.
Does he have a succession plan?
Yes, he does. Yes, he actually does. But that's the point, is that, you know, you used to have laser-focused Windows, and now you have a Mush Galanz. You used to have laser-focused Mac OS, and now you have a Mush Galanz, and you still have a laser-focused Linux. And it's just, it's obvious. You know, when you look at it, this was designed by a committee versus this was designed by somebody with a vision.
Yep.
And we're seeing it over and over and over again. We've talked about it with your programs for your ham radio.
Yeah.
When one person creates the program, yes, there are bottlenecks, there are issues, there are delays. Fine. But they've scratched their itch, and everybody's got that itch, and they have a vision for the program. And if you want something that they don't want, you don't get it.
Yep.
And if they want something you don't want, you get it anyway.
Yep.
And that's the way it works. And you see that a lot in the Linux community, because a lot of those programs are written by a single individual to do one specific thing.
Yep.
That XKCD comic of the entire internet infrastructure being held up by that one guy from Nebraska who's been maintaining this critical piece of...
Yes. Well, take a look at the stuff in the beginning of the internet. You know, one guy said, we're going to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And lo, it was done that way.
Yeah.
And that's that, you know, that's Doug...
Engelbart. And the mouse.
He created it, and he said, this is the way it's going to be. And there wasn't a committee that said... You need to add 42 more buttons, and it has to be able to sing to me, so I need a speaker. It was just, here's your mouse.
Yep.
You're done now.
Yep.
But see, Windows is struggling, and like you said, it's so disjointed because it's got these different groups, and the biggest problem is they don't talk to each other. So they're off doing the other things and trying to get creative ideas to, you know, make the next big version of Windows bigger and better, that something people can't live without. Not like back, I remember us going to Marketplace Mall when they were bringing out Windows 3.1. We were there for the midnight sale, and people were lining up to get it. Now, you know, different versions of Windows come out, and people go, oh.
Or they actively dislike it and don't want to have it.
Yeah, I mean, because it's nothing new. They can sit there and try to spin it and move things around.
And, right, and the new stuff is just the old stuff moved around, and you don't know where anything is anymore.
And the other big problem they've done is a number of their products they've launched, you know, and got people hooked on, and then all of a sudden abandoned.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, sorry, we don't like that anymore, and so you're off on your own. Forget it.
That's the other beauty of open source software.
Yep.
You don't like it, you stop making it. I like it, I pick it up and continue making it.
And Linux, you know, there's so many different things that are supported better than Windows. If there's an issue, they just go ahead and fix it.
Right.
Within the Linux community. They don't sit there and wait for Patch Tuesday of this year that's been laying around for the past 6 years.
Right.
I was just thinking, you know, we've talked about the Google graveyard of Google killed products. I wonder if there's a Microsoft graveyard. Yeah, there's several. I didn't know Microsoft was killing Publisher in 2026.
Oh, yes. It's long gone. It's too bad. It was, you know, the product that a lot of people used.
Mm-hmm. Windows, yeah, Windows 10 is October of 2025. Support for Windows 10 ends unless you pay extra for the whatever they call that extra support you can pay for per fee.
And that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, what is it? You can pay for 3 years, but if you skip the first year,
you pay for the first 2 years.
Right, so when you try to start it in year two, you pay for the year you skipped.
And if you do it in year three, you pay for all 3 years.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a...
And it's per seat, so it's businesses who can't get away from some specific thing, and so they're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars extra to keep their old computers running.
Yep. And a lot of that is because, again, the person who wrote the program wrote it for X.
Yep.
And they abandoned it, but because it's not open source, nobody else can pick it up.
Yep.
In Linux, there's almost always somebody who's willing to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you usually get, you know, it doesn't, I'm running a newer version of the operating system and it doesn't run this. Well, don't worry. There's an updated thing that will do that.
Yep.
For you. So.
It's almost always something similar.
Yep.
Now, we had a success this week at our office. So you might have remembered a few weeks ago, someone was running Windows 7 and had to have Windows 7 on his new Mac, and we couldn't get it to work.
Right.
Because it's the EFI boot didn't work. But so this time, a guy's running his business financial software in DOS on Windows XP.
Wow.
Inside Parallels.
Wow.
Virtual machine on his Mac. And his Mac died, and so we need to put him into a new Mac. Now, Jackie said, no, you're not going to be able to do that. That's not going to work because the Windows 7 thing didn't work. Well, it still worked. Because he had a legacy version of Parallels that still supported XP. The current version of Parallels is 10 and 11 only. I had to put an older Mac OS on it that still supported that legacy Parallels. But he said, I just wanted to work for a couple more years until I retire. Okay.
Yeah.
So that DOS program you've been using for 30 years. And he said it used to work. So here's a question somebody might know. He used to be able to use the mouse in the VM to control the DOS cursor to be able to click on menus. That doesn't work anymore. He's got to use the arrow buttons to move up and down the pointer. So we're figuring there's some...
Right.
Driver somewhere that translated the mouse controls into DOS cursor movements and
it's gone.
Yeah, it's just the coordinates on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. I have two old desktop computers running Windows 7, and I would like to put Linux on one of them to see personally how great it is, and as you have described. Are there instructions published somewhere by you or others that I could follow to make this transition accurately and fully?
We have published, I'm looking for it now, on our link list, the best Linuxes for beginners that come with really good instructions on how to set it up and do it.
Okay, I assume that Windows 7, that operating system, needs to be removed entirely before Linux is installed. Is that correct?
During the Linux installation, you have a choice of dual booting, which means you now have both of them on your machine simultaneously, or letting Linux own the whole computer. Oh. Honestly, unless you're using the Windows 7 machine regularly... Get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just get rid of Windows 7.
It'll erase the hard drive and reinstall the Linux over that.
Okay, and again, instructions for this are posted where?
Steve is looking for them right now.
Puppy Linux, probably.
I don't remember where.
Yeah, we've got, so I did a search for best Linux in our link list, and there's a whole bunch of different... hits from different versions of Linux, best for laptops, best for Windows users, best for Mac users.
Yeah, and try any one of the flavors. It's not that hard. Once you get a bootable, say, flash drive, and put it in there. Here's the thing. You can first put it in and do what they call a test drive, where it'll run off the flash drive. It's a little bit slower, but you can sort of look around and everything else and think, maybe this flavor's for me, or otherwise get another flash drive, put a different flavor on that, and do the boot trial on that. Once you're satisfied with one, then you can go ahead and install it and play around further.
But the differences between them are almost so minor that you probably wouldn't even notice.
Yeah.
Okay, what you should do is go to Tom's Hardware /how-to.
Oh, good one, yeah.
/how-to-install-linux. Steve is looking for that. He's going to put a link on our website. It should be up in a couple of minutes.
Okay. All right. Great.
And basically, it's a matter of downloading the Linux of your choice, installing it on a USB drive, booting with that USB drive, and how you do that depends a lot on what computer you've got.
Windows 7 computer might be too old to boot a USB drive.
Might be.
So you got to check in your BIOS on how to boot USB.
Or if it's still got a CD-ROM drive on it, burn the CD.
Right. You can burn it as a CD. And then boot from the CD and install it that way.
Which an old computer would boot more readily from a CD than a jump drive?
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, that old.
Okay. Yeah, well, I've got CD drives in both of these machines.
Because usually once you put a CD in, it'll sit there and say, oh, wait, do you want to boot from the CD? Or otherwise it'll boot from the hard drive. And you got to usually hit enter that to boot from the CD-ROM.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, I'll look forward to the link on your website, and thank you very much.
Right. So if you're going to download put it on a CD, you're going to want to make sure that you've got some sort of CD burner program on one of your computers somewhere. Doesn't have to be on the Windows 7 machine.
Well, the machine that I'm using is Windows 10, which also has a CD burner in it. Should I download it on that machine and then take it over to install on one of the older ones?
Yes.
That'd probably be easiest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Okay. Thank you. I look forward to the link.
All right. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Steve's looking for it now, frantically.
Yep, I got it posted.
Oh, he's got it posted. It's done. So,
interesting.
What took you so long?
I must have posted two in the same minute because they're sorted backwards.
Interesting.
So your sort must not go over to seconds. It must only do minutes.
It only does minutes. I apologize for not adding seconds as the...
I'll
as
slow
the
down thing. My posting from now on.
Okay.
Both Nick and I reached for a drink at the same time.
Yeah. So, dead air because we were both taking a sip. If you've got an old machine and you're tired of Windows, try Linux.
Especially, the old timers, like us, the graybeards. It reminds me a lot of the early days of the Apple II and DOS, where you got to tinker.
Yeah.
And you got to write your own little programs, and you got to, that's how you learned to do that, because that's all it did. But that was the fun of it, is tinkering like that.
Yep. I wrote
you're saying now they call that the maker service. We're making things.
Right. We're makers now instead of just programmers or tinkerers or screw arounders or whatever we used to be called.
Tink, tink, tink.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're interested in changing from your operating, or you've just got an old machine you want to play is a good thing.
Yep.
It expands the mind. Linux is not a bad choice. Your other good choice is Chrome OS Flex, which essentially turns your computer into a Chromebook, it's a little less capable in the sense of running all those tens of millions of Linux programs, but it works like a Chromebook works, and that's not a bad thing either. So both of those are available, and both of those are free, so you can download them and try them. And both of them, as Steve pointed out, when you boot it from the USB drive or from the thumb drive, you get to try it without installing it. Now, it's going to run, it's going to load programs very, very slowly. That's just the nature of a thumb drive or a CD drive. But it will run them as quickly as your machine would run them. All right, we're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody get up.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I should point out before we go back to the phone two things. First, for Don from Pittsburgh, the link that was posted is all about creating a thumb drive, a jump drive, to install Linux with. You won't follow the first part of that instructions. You'll follow the standard instructions you've always used to burn a CD and a bootable CD. But then the second thing I wanted to point out, I wonder what it was. Oh, yeah, if you take a look at our homepage at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you will see that we are just a couple of days away from our 34th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
We've been on the air for 33 years, 11 months, and 28 days. And on Jazz 90.1 for 15 years, 2 months, and 25 days. It really doesn't seem like 15 years.
And you know what else?
What else?
It's also birthday month.
All four of us have birthdays next month. The three of us and Soundbites all have September birthdays.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it'll be a fun month
for us. It's exactly right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Webster, New York. What's up, Roger?
I have a new Android Google password manager that's got a headache.
Okay.
I have two Google accounts, a backup account, which shows a Google.com password manager with a correct name and correct password and room for notes. My default old-time password, email address, does not show the name or the password. Did you hang up?
No, we're here.
We're listening.
All right. The password is hidden. I cannot view it, nor is the space for notes readily available.
Okay, what is the password manager you're using?
Built-in Google password manager on my Android phone.
Built into Chrome, probably.
Yes.
Chrome doesn't sync passwords with your other accounts. So it's
been there forever until my new phone.
Maybe on the old phone you weren't syncing your passwords to your Google account. They were only on the phone.
Yeah.
That's
possible. You still have your old phone working by any chance?
No, I gave it to the VA.
Yeah.
Do you have your old? Do you have a computer that you have Google Chrome on?
No, I have to go to the library. I don't have a PC. I only have a phone.
Okay. You don't want to do that there.
Mm-mm.
I'm just looking to see if you can. Don't do that. If you can see your passwords on the Google.
I don't think that browser will allow it. Because it's so limited, you know, on the newer phones, what it displays and what it can't.
The data is there.
Password.google.com, you can see your passwords in a web browser for the account you're logged into. And that also will check your passwords to see if any of them are in known breaches.
Passwordsplural.google.com
will show you the passwords in a browser window rather than in the password manager.
All right, wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, so you should be able to see your passwords in there. And then, theoretically, when you then sign in to a site using that password, so you can copy them out so you have them. And then when
I have a book. Everything's written down.
Okay, then when you sign into that site, it should then save that password on the new phone.
And there's an export command, export and import at that website, so you can export them from one account and import them to the other if you need to.
Well, I'm going to log in with my primary account, the one I've had for 5 years.
Right.
And that's the one that has your passwords listed?
Right, so...
Yes.
There you go. So if you log in with...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
What puzzles me is my backup account name and password are in the Google Password Manager. I'm able to view them or not, and I have room to make notes. I cannot view my primary password or make notes about when it was installed, when it was changed, things like that.
Right. So what it sounds like is on the old phone, you synchronized the alternate account, but you didn't synchronize the main account.
All right, I'll figure out how to do that.
That's why they didn't come over. But from now on, if you have all your passwords, when you put them into the browser on the new phone with your new account, they should sync to your main account's password log.
Okay. At the browser, go to passwords.google.com. Export to where?
Passwords.google.com, and you can see them all. If you want to export them, they become a file on your desktop or on your phone, and you can read through them there. And if you want to import them to your Google... To your other account, you can do that through...
The same passwords.google.com has an import command as well.
Right, so you would log on to one account and export everything, and then log into the other account and import everything.
So I want to import to my new account.
Sorry?
Click the import button at passwords.google.com. Under the gear menu, there's a export and import command.
Okay. That gets me in the right path. I'll go butt my head against the wall for a while and see what I can do.
Okay, good luck.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Roger.
The check's on the way, guys.
Thanks. We appreciate that.
It looks like Google will not sync passwords between different Google accounts. But if you're logged into the same account on multiple devices, it will sync passwords between your devices.
Right.
But you have to turn on that sync.
Right.
In the settings,
for each device.
Right, in Chrome settings. I'm not sure where it's done in Android. Probably Android settings too.
Right. So that's one of the reasons that we often recommend a program like MPass, which runs on every operating system, interfaces with your systems, and is shareable across, and you can have one database that's shared across every one of your devices, and that database is encrypted before it goes up to the cloud. So you are always protected. Now, again, the caveat is that the encryption method, the key it uses is your password to get into MPass. So two things about that. First, don't forget your MPass password. And secondly, the more complex it is, the better the encryption of the file. So if your password is 123456...
That's the same password I have in my luggage.
Then it's not going to be very well encrypted, and pretty much anybody can break it. But if your password is horse staple battery, then you've got a much better chance of having it not cracked.
And everyone, also go into your accounts, Google account, Apple account, Microsoft account. Make sure there's an updated phone number and email address. We had another customer this week that they got a new computer. They don't know their Google password, so they can't log into their email on the new computer. And their landline phone number is on the account, which...
They haven't had in how long?
Well, no, they have their landline. Oh. But Google wants to text the landline.
Right.
So I'm trying to... Well, how was that set up in the first place? Because it won't set up the phone number until it gets the verification code. Because I know Apple will call a phone number if you tell it to.
Right.
So maybe Google used to call phone numbers.
I don't remember that.
And then switched everybody to texting. But you can't text a landline. So the only thing we're thinking we can try to do now, get a burner phone, port your landline phone number to the burner phone so you can receive a text.
Yeah.
And then
port it back.
Port it back, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing is every system has a recovery information.
Right. And that usually goes to your cell phone text number or a different email address.
Right. So make sure. So you should always have at least two email addresses. Both of those email addresses, neither of those email addresses should be your ISP. Because ISPs change, as we've seen with Frontier. Yep. And you may change your ISP and you lose that address.
Like Roadrunner.
So if you should have two non-ISP addresses. So Google and Yahoo, Microsoft and Yahoo. Because if you do, I was about to say Microsoft and OneDrive, but those are the same thing.
That's the same thing, yeah.
So
a lot of people will use their spouse. But so each spouse gets the other spouse's recovery information. They just don't get divorced.
Right, exactly. And then you want a separate phone number so that it can call that phone number.
Maybe a child.
Right.
Adult child, yeah.
Right. And in addition, if you are on Google, one of the things that you can do is set up emergency contacts. So if something happens to you, those people have access to your stuff, which is probably important. That's I've set that up both on Google and on NPass. My wife has NPass on her computer. My daughter has my NPass on her computer. So if and when something happens to me, both of them can get it. All my passwords, all the notes field tell them what to do with that information, where to get it, what it's for, so they can manage my bank accounts and my credit cards and everything else. They're really not going to care about, you know, my account on some shopping site, except to make sure that the credit card goes to me, not to them.
So but, if you set up your emergency contact or your legacy contact, some systems call it,
right,
beforehand, it makes it a whole lot easier for a company to let you into your, you know, deceased inaccessible.
Right, and that works on the other end.
Yep.
Everybody listening should do it for their parents. And your children should do it for you, and on and on and on. Somebody's got to be able to get at your stuff if your stuff is at all important to you. So, for example, my Photos app on Google and on Amazon are unlimited. So I've got pictures going back to the 70s. When I go, who's going to get at those pictures? They're going to be important to somebody, if for nothing else, than my funeral. So the ability for them to get at my information is important if they want to be able to keep those pictures and keep that stuff.
Was that in color or black and white?
Some of them. Depends. Some of them are just pictures of etched stones.
Yeah.
Okay? That I took later on. But yeah, so you know, be aware that that it's a morbid subject, it's a ghoulish subject.
But it's a subject, though, that everybody's got to have, whether they like it or not.
It's a simple fact of life.
Yeah.
Yep. So Google and Apple have legacy information you can set up ahead of time. Microsoft doesn't. They have a next of kin process where they require a death certificate and official notification.
Right.
I can see how that is more legally sound.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to just give someone access. It's, you know, abusive spouse breaks up and they're your legacy contact and they get all your stuff. So I can see that being.
Well, I'm sure, though, you run into it too, Steve. I did a number of times when I had the shop going, is people would bring in their computers.
Yeah.
And a loved one had passed and they needed to get in there to get some information. And there was a password on. And yep. They just bring it in and say, well, you can get around it, can't you?
Right.
No.
It used to be a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
But in adding theft protection and yep. The Find My Devices and internet activation, encryption, it is almost impossible now to break into some computers.
Yeah, we used to have ways.
The joke is you can't break the encryption. All you can do is guess the password.
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, it used to be hard. I mean, yep. I mean, we had some ways that we could do it. But, you know, there was a lot of times, no. I mean, especially getting into some of the banking stuff and all that other stuff. Nope.
Yep.
The other thing is your phones. A lot of people have biometric unlock for their phones. You better have a backup of the PIN number. Because if you're gone, unless they've cut off your thumb and carried it over while they're playing the Mission Impossible theme.
Or pry your eyes open.
Pry your eyes open. You need that backup four-digit or five- or six-digit PIN in order to get into that phone.
There's a thing I've read about where police don't want to have to bother getting court orders to unlock suspects' phones. So they'll call the suspect, who then unlocks their phone to answer it, and then the police jump out and mug him and take the phone away before it can lock right. again.
Or they just hold the phone up to your face and it unlocks. I don't know how legal that is.
But. Well, yeah, so there's we've talked about this before. It's the old, it's the safe rule. A combination is something you know, and a Fifth Amendment protection, you can't be compelled. A key is something you have, and you can be compelled to produce a key.
Right.
So the combination on your phone, you cannot be compelled, but your face, you can be compelled.
Yeah, but the easy way around that is just close your eyes.
Yeah.
At least on a Google phone, if they can't see your
there's
eyes.
Attention. Yeah, they added it after there was a big case, I think it was Seattle, a toddler learned how to say, Alaska, get me a dollhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And held the phone up to sleeping mommy's face and approved it, and it showed up. And then, so apparently the parents went to the news to explain what this happens. And so the news reported, Alaska, get me a dollhouse. Hundreds of people all over the city started getting dollhouses.
Yep.
Because Amazon has one-click ordering, where you click a button and it doesn't ask you any information. It just bills the credit card it has on file and does it.
Yep.
And so both Apple and Google added attention features. So it's not just face detection. Your eyes have to be open and looking at the camera.
Right, right. I get Alaska telling me all the time, it's been a while since you've ordered cat food. Oh, no, it's been a while since you've ordered dog food.
Yes.
We currently did not have a dog when that message started coming up. And so you're right. It had been a while that we had not ordered dog food because at the time we had no dog.
If it was smarter, it would have said our condolences on the loss of your dog
because exactly.
You stopped buying dog food.
Exactly. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's AI.
Well, that goes back to the first news story.
Right.
They're going to charge you extra for smarter AI.
Right. AI is now the new hotness, the big buzzword. It's everybody wants it in everything.
You know that presentation we did? Can you replace the word blockchain with AI?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. The big thing is, AI ain't cheap. It requires massive computers in the background. And you know, somebody's paying for those. Right now, it's Apple and Google and Microsoft and all of them. They want it to be you.
And where did they get the data it learned on?
from everybody.
Scraped to the internet from people who didn't know they were being scraped.
Yep.
And didn't put their information in the public domain to be scraped. Just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's public.
That's right. Legally.
Legally, yeah.
So, yeah, there are a lot of lawsuits right now and more coming.
Yeah, when you go into one of the art AIs and say, you know, draw me a landscape in the genre of Monet, and it does.
Right.
He's probably not going to complain.
Right, because he's old enough, you know, draw me something for Seurat. I get that. But, you know, when you draw something in the style of a current or a song,
yeah,
you know, write me a jingle about X in the style of Taylor Swift. Well, guess what? Half the time it sounds like Taylor Swift.
Because it looked at all her old lyrics.
Right. And that's, you know, an amazing feat in terms of technology.
But
it's probably going to pork the woman off.
Ignoring copyright.
Right. You know, who's got the right to be Taylor Swift? Probably not me.
Yeah.
I'm spitballing here, but I'm thinking it's probably not me. So it's the kind of thing that we're seeing more and more. And I get, you know, well, and most of them nowadays, you have multiple voices in multiple ways, but they're very careful that they're not real voices. That's another thing Amazon did for a while. You could buy Samuel L. Jackson as your voice on Amazon, on your Alexa device.
And some GPS companies did that, too.
Some GPS companies.
At least they hired people to do it.
Exactly. Nobody bought them. I mean, a minimum number of people bought them. They thought, this is great. People are going to want this everywhere. Nobody wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the prices they were charging at the very least.
Yeah.
Remember when we used to buy ringtones?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Not me, no.
Yeah. Buying ringtones. That was a thing at a time.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, this goes back to the same kind of thing we're seeing everywhere. This new technology comes out and nobody knows what it's for. Nobody knows how to monetize it. Nobody knows how to use it. There were websites back in the day that put out blogs that you paid micropayments for. Remember micropayments?
Yep.
Quarter of a penny to read my blog. Well, your blog better be worth a heck of a lot more than a quarter of a penny if I'm going to pay a quarter of a penny. Most of them were not.
And then it turned out the transaction fees cost more than that.
So it was a genuine problem. I've got microtransactions sitting in an account somewhere that I've never recovered because it's like 4 cents and it will cost me 30 cents to get it.
Yeah.
There's no point in that.
Until they start charging you a low balance fee and it goes negative and then
they
send you dunning letters. Yeah.
Right. There's everybody needs to make money. I absolutely get this. We are a capitalist society. We do not live without money. The problem is, what can you do to make money that isn't onerous to everybody else on the planet? And we haven't figured that out in a lot of ways yet. You know, you get some altruists, like the people who do Linux, like the people who do any sort of open source free program for any operating system. You know, there's free stuff on Linux. There's free stuff on Mac. There's free stuff on Windows. And those are nice. LibreOffice is available everywhere, and it's free. But they've found alternate ways to make money. If you're an organization, you can buy support for OpenOffice. It's still cheaper than Microsoft Office, and so a lot of companies are buying it. And they pay less than they would pay for Microsoft Office, but they get a product that's just as capable with support. And that's how they maintain themselves.
Yep.
But, you know, there's a lot of small companies that do what they do out of love, and it's all free, and it's all open source, and it's great. But those people aren't looking to make money. The people who need to make money have to find some way to do it. And the only way they've found that really seems to work over and over and over again is advertising.
Yeah. With the thing that we hate the most.
which is the thing that we hate the most.
We think we hate it, but we need it to decide how we're going to buy something.
That's exactly right. Without it, how would we know what to buy?
Yeah.
All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. Good questions this week. I hope the first couple of people that we helped actually get the answers they need. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Just a reminder, we will not be doing the lounge tomorrow night because it is Labor Day weekend, and you should all be out not laboring. But we'll see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, would you, for heaven's sakes?